KPCW News Time now, 8:18. Good morning. Well, on the phone with me now with an update of the building and construction going on in Summit County, I have Community Development Director Pat Putt. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start with the Discovery Project. It seems like we've done a 180 on this project. Planning Commission forwarding a positive recommendation on this parcel that will include 30 units of affordable housing. So while there's a lot of support for that affordable housing, I still get the feeling that those on the Planning Commission don't really love this project. Is it going to be one that we regret?
Boy, I sure hope not. Everybody probably out there listening who's been here for a while knows this project goes all the way back to probably, 2010, 2011. And I think it was actually in 2011 when the county council gave a conditional approval for the project. I mean, this goes all the way back to the first Obama administration. And like when that approval was given, what happened is the county council assigned a up to maximum unit count for the property and further identified specific locations on the property where the development could occur. And again, that property is about 80 acres. For those who aren't really familiar, it's the piece of property that sits to the south and slightly above the Wildman School. The challenge came over the next, roughly six years or so, was to find a way to physically make that development fit into those small development areas on the property. And that was an incredible challenge. I know the developer went through a number of engineering firms and architectural firms to kind of find the right team to kind of end up with a design that would fit, particularly here in the last 3 years. It has been an extensive exercise between the planning department and the engineering department and the design team to find out, is there a way to make that fit? And frankly, I mean, at point in times, there was, maybe a couple elbows and maybe a few punches, but in the end, what we came up with, I think, working together on this to try and find the best solution possible works. I really hope we don't regret that. I mean, in the public hearing on Tuesday evening, there were a lot of people who spoke to this, many for, a couple still expressing some concerns about that. But the message that I heard both from the public and from, substantial number of the planning commissioners is there was a real transformation of this project design. And does it set the model for the future? Well, the model for the future, maybe there isn't one, but I mean, clearly there is a core value with the county council that we're going to try and better manage our needs for affordable housing and obtainable housing. And this is just one example how, through a lot of hard work, we're going to be able to incorporate it. Every unit that we can build is vital to us. So I think the ultimate answer to your question is we're going to see whether or not this is successful. I believe it will be.
This is the only project that made it through this core idea before it was repealed by county council. I mean, and we're talking about the need for affordable housing some 7 years ago, and yet really, with the exception of maybe the richer apartments, haven't seen a lot done.
Yeah, valid point. And there's a number of factors that probably play into that. Part of it is, market-driven. Part of it is, what's happened in the local market. Part of it is just to be candid, the tools that we've been using to try and create this, not all of those have worked very successfully. I think you're going to see coming into 2017, a recommitment from the council, not only working within the organization here, but working together with the city and some of our not-for-profits and some of our other community stakeholders, and including the resorts and some of the major landowners, to try and find a way to update those tools. I'm very optimistic on where we can be. And there's a number of things, obviously, sort of in the queue. We'll be going back to council. early February to re-engage in the discussion on the employee housing over at the Canyons. Silver Creek Village is likely to be moving forward in 2017, maybe not vertical construction, but all the infrastructure necessary to see some of that housing begin to come out of the ground, hopefully at the beginning of 2018. So there's a lot happening behind the scenes. It may not be translating in vertical construction right now. I mean, don't forget, we've got some units under construction at the Whole Foods complex there in Kimball Junction. There's more to come.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Whole Foods. Where are we with the affordable housing and the actually opening of the store there?
Well, the affordable housing has been timed to be part of the first phase. I need to step back. Probably there isn't a first phase. There's just one phase now. There's two building pads currently under construction. The one that is a bit more advanced in its completion, that is the satellite pad, or what we would always call through the process pad B. Lower level is going to be small retail. Above that is going to be the employee housing. That's slightly ahead on the construction schedule than the main building. Main building's currently being roughed in. I think last time we talked, I had mentioned that the targeted date was somewhere in late spring, early summer. That had always been the expectation. We've been told that that's probably pushing back into the summer or early fall, not so much as a problem or a slowdown in the construction, but the time that's going to be necessary to be spent on sort of the tenant finish on the inside to make sure that those are done in a manner that, between the property owner and Whole Foods is done in a manner that's working. So by this time next year, the facility will be open. The grocery store part of it looks to be late summer, early fall.
All right. Conceptually, let's go to the Canyons Master Plan. And I was going to say, conceptually, this sounds great. To create a vibrant enough community for everyone to want to stay within the village. Realistically, though, is this plan going to keep people out of their cars?
Well, that's what we're trying to answer. And again, the response is we really hope so. The revision, the amendments that the Planning Commission is wading into and studying really deal with the resort core area. I think that's important for everybody to understand. This doesn't affect the upper mountain part of the resort. It doesn't really affect the lower village per se. It's the area in and around the Grand Summit, the Silverado, the Westgate. No additional densities being proposed, and we're probably really not talking about significant changes in building massing. How we go about defining that some of those building heights is one of the topics that we're talking about. The original master plan and the development agreement talked building sizes in terms of stories and half stories, which may not be the most precise way of being able to create some predictability. What we're talking about now is actually establishing elevations for each of those buildings, and we think that that's going to help in the process in terms of predictability, not only for future builders, but the residents who own property within the canyons right now. Everybody can understand once a benchmark is established what elevation 6,500 or 7,000 feet is and what potential impacts that may have, a building may have on that build out. The key part of this, Leslie, is one of the key parts of this that the Planning Commission is very interested in understanding as a staff is the broader connectivity within that core area, not just cars, not just transit, but sort of the human powered, the walking, the pedestrian connections. What we have on the books right now is very, broad. The commission is looking for a lot more specifics. Replay and TCFC is working hard to help answer those questions. One of the questions that came up, in the last two meetings was, how does this particular set of amendments affect the Canyon's transportation plan, and how does that in turn affect the broader Snyderville Basin planning strategies that are going on right now with the work that Caroline Ferris and Alfred Knox are working on? Those are going to be the things that we're going to be kind of working through, bites at the apple, with the Planning Commission here in the winter into the early spring. Anytime we have an opportunity to take a tremendous amount of density that's predicated on a plan that's a decade old and have a chance to reevaluate that and refine that is a good thing. There's going to be a lot of opportunity for the public to engage in this. To the credit of Replay and TCFC, they've gone out early and done some initial public outreach to the neighborhood. Will there be more? Possibly. But I just want to assure everybody that long before a decision gets made, there's going to be ample opportunity for the people to who are affected by this and the community at large to take part. We're going to be as progressive as we can in moving this forward. You're going to probably see some form of Canyon discussion virtually on every meeting. It's not to expedite it per se. It's just once you start building that knowledge base, you know, if it were a snowball and getting it moving, we want to be able to kind of build on a conversation that we have one week and move into the next. So this is, again, going to be another big work item for the commission, ultimately landing with the council here, and hopefully we can get that to them this summer.
Okay, real quick, it's been a year since Sundance, and the county has worked hard to put a new law with regard to helicopter landings. Any word about some stealth landings perhaps in Wasatch County at all?
No, haven't heard anything about that. Again, we went through a pretty exhaustive public process to refine the regulations for helicopters in the basin. Several defined uses, air taxis. The only permitted helicopter activities in the basin that are allowed on the books right now are for emergency medical services, public safety, and obviously in the summertime, agriculture. Other than that, they're not permitted. So hopefully we've got enough code predictability. Hopefully we've got the regulations in place to deal with that so that we don't have a replay of what we had a year ago.
Okay. Pat Putt, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:31. 8:32 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, a last-minute addition to last night's City Council agenda is going to cost taxpayers $25 million, money that voters overwhelmingly agreed to pay in last November's election to purchase Bonanza Flat. In the studio with more, I have Park City Mayor Jack Thomas and the Executive Director of Utah Open Lands, Wendy Fisher. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
So, Jack, how did this finally come about? I mean, I know that the city has certainly had its eyes on the property since it was foreclosed on.
Well, it was an arduous process. I mean, initially when we started early discussions, we didn't see that much hope, to be honest with you. And but as we discussed things with the bank, they kind of gave us the impression that it would be a good idea to be ready if their negotiations with others, and they were meeting with several others, were to stall or hesitate, that might not be a bad idea for us to have some money in place. And the council very overwhelmingly felt that that would be a logical thing to do, take it to the voters and see how the voters felt, how the community felt.
So it sounds like there was a bidding war for the property amongst all of these, included?
I don't know if I would typify it as a bidding war, but I know that there were significant others early competing for this parcel. And I think the difference between ourselves and the other entities is most any other developer is going to be looking at the mitigation of issues. You know, they have to deal with sewer, water, power, gas, development, soils, lots of different aspects of it. And given that we were just looking for the land, it makes our process considerably easier. And I think there became an open door for us to participate rather late in this process, and we're delighted to see that it indeed happened.
So do you think that the other entities then were actually willing to pay more for it, or they didn't want to pay as much because they had to do all of the infrastructure?
Clearly my sense was that they were asking for more time for whatever their process is, and that they were willing to pay more.
Yeah, so how did we get to $38 million?
How did we get there?
Yeah.
Well, I think that was the number that I felt like we had to be to be anywhere close. And I think that they were interested in money sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Well, I'm just wondering, I mean, Wells Fargo wasn't trying to play us here, were they?
No, I think they were very straight from day one.
All right. What was Councilmember Andy Bierman's role in this? It seems to be that there seemed to be how he made this come about. Was it anything extraordinary, or?
I don't know where you got that. The truth is I started the conversations with Dan Bartok and Tom Daley quite a while before Andy's involvement. Andy came into it later and was a part of the negotiation, but I was at every meeting.
Okay. Wendy, will you locate the property for us?
Yeah, Bonanza Flats is a property that most people are actually really familiar with and probably don't know that it was in private hands. If you know Bloods Lake, if you know the Wasatch Crest Trail, you probably park on this property in order to access it. So it's just above outside of the Park City official limits, and it's between Wasatch Mountain State Park and really all the ski areas from Brighton to Deer Valley. It's 1,350 acres of ground that's sandwiched between that and some Forest Service land as well.
All right. And we always call it Bonanza Flats, and I have somebody always remind me that it's Bonanza Flat on the map. So are we calling it Bonanza Flats, and we'll just change the map? I mean, because every time I say flats, I hear about it.
All right. Well, that's something I'll have to be more sensitive to in the future.
Wendy, you're very optimistic about raising the funding gap, the $13 million. What makes you so sure?
Well, you're never sure, and that's a lot of money to raise. I think really what I'm speaking to and what I've spoken to in the past is, let's face it, we've seen Mountain Accord. We've seen the Wasatch Canyon's Tomorrow plans. All of them have been study after study after study that have shown us and demonstrated to us that whether you're on the Wasatch front or the Wasatch back, this is a pivotal piece of property. So it is time for Salt Lake County, Summit County, Salt Lake City Public Utilities, all of the government entities that have an interest in this, that have participated in those studies, to step up to help this gap. And then also we're very, very interested in having Wasatch front residents participate in this as well, and people outside of those who voted for the bond. When we did a pledge drive for Bonanza Flats to show support back in October before the bond was even on the ballot, I had people from the Pine Brook area all the way down to, Mill Creek in Salt Lake saying, can I vote on that? So I think there is a lot of support, and quite frankly, I think it's time to stop studying and start implementing.
Do we have any commitments from anyone at this point?
I have had conversations with Salt Lake City Mayor Jackie Biskupski, Ben McAdams, the mayor of Salt Lake County, Summit County, and they're all very interested in participating. Summit County was at the event. Roger Armstrong spoke up as to their commitment to generate funds for this. And I think that there's significant support from the adjacent entities.
So is this kind of double jeopardy, though, for Park City taxpayers, given that now we may see money come from Summit County, so those living in the city are paying really twice for this?
Well, I suppose if Summit County levied a tax, that might be so, but I think that they're looking for other means and other monies that they have.
All right. So there was a webpage that's going to be opened or is open to...
Yes, and now we might have to work on that because it does say SaveBonanzaFlats.org. So I'm already wondering about that. That actually will have to go live in probably the next 24 hours. But until then, you can go to Utah Open Lands, and we have a page specifically dedicated to Bonanza Flats.
I know. We should just change it. Yeah.
You can go to the Summit Land Conservancy, who is also part of the nonprofit coalition that's helping this come together. They have a page on Bonanza Flats, Save Our Canyons, and the Wasatch Backcountry Alliance does as well.
There are development rights, my understanding, on the property. Do we try and do some development here and try and raise some of that $13 million?
No. Simple answer. There may have been some pre-approved development rights, but I think those had lapsed, and our interest is to see this be open land.
All right. There is some use, though, for a commercial entity. The Talisker Club gets to keep their yurt or something?
There's some pre-existing uses on the land. There's a small yurt, a small warming shed, sleigh riding hill, and a small parking area, and it amounts to less than 6.5 acres, and that will be moved and shifted to a less prominent location on the lot, but that's something that we felt was a minor blemish on this deal.
All right, and as I understand it, I mean, what we talked about during the election, about $15 for every $100,000 of assessed valuation.
That's
for
right.
Primary
about,
residences.
Right, and 15, as I recall.
And then about $27 for commercial and second homeowners.
Exactly.
For every 100,000.
Exactly.
And then the bond is for 15 or 20 years?
The bond is for 15 years.
All right. The property is in Wasatch County. Do we annex it?
Different story, different discussion at a later time.
All right. Currently, motorized recreational vehicles are allowed as a open space use. Will those continue to be allowed?
One of the things that I think we do and other conservation groups do is to do a resource analysis. And that really needs to be done on this particular piece of property as well, to look at what kinds of things need to have a little tender, loving care over time and what uses may be appropriate or inappropriate, as well as, you know, where they may be inappropriate or appropriate. And that's something that we did for Toll Canyon. We did a management plan. In this property, I don't expect it to be any different. I think that the conservation organizations involved, from the Summit Land Conservancy to Save Our Canyons, will get the stakeholders involved, and we will make sure that we look at the resources so that we can protect this into perpetuity. I think the important thing for us to realize is if this is developed and privately held, none of those uses occur.
Yeah, only going to get more popular. And as you all know, that it's just right now the parking lot there during summer days just packed. I mean, you're lucky to find a parking spot. With sometimes it seems like cars going to go over the edge of the road. Do we? This resource plan then would kind of look at where new parking would be, or
absolutely. I mean, you have to look at trailhead development as part of this. You have to look at trail development as part of this. You know, Park Cities really has set a tremendous standard in terms of not just open space preservation, but also in terms of trail and trail development. So Mountain Trails Foundation is a part of the coalition. We're going to be looking to the experts to provide their expertise on how we make this more functional. I mean, the reason that people have a hard time parking now is because a lot of times we're trespassing.
Right. So in the event that the city is not able to raise the $13 million, Jack, do we try and pull it from another fund?
Well, I think what we need to do is focus on the work at hand, and that's generating the money. And we've got that first 90 days to do that before we have to step up with another $1.5 million. So that would be another discussion at that moment in time to see where we are. But I'm optimistic that we'll get there.
So we won't issue the $25 million in bonds until we know that we have the $13
million? That's correct.
Okay. Anything else you think that people ought to know about this at this point?
No. I mean, I think most everybody out there knows this property. They have a personal relationship with it. And, you know, it's amazing. It's significant. It's ironic, as an architect, that the most significant thing that I could do is not build something. But I kind of like the idea.
I think one of the things that's interesting to me, Leslie, especially talking with some of the different nonprofit partners, and you probably will even remember back to the Jack Johnson Company days, there have always been development plans for this particular piece of property. So we're kind of at a pivotal moment. We're at a choice of what we do with this property. Are we able to come together as numerous different communities who recognize that this touches so many different constituents and jurisdictions and preserve it? Because the alternatives, I think, really is development.
Well, great. Wendy, I want to thank you for your time. Jack, I want to ask you about a couple of other issues discussed at yesterday's meeting. That is the community center. Some debate about the council about sticking to that $4.5 million budget. I mean, is that flexible, or we just need to kind of wait and see what what happens here? Or?
Well, I think what we were saying in our meeting last night is that oftentimes in construction projects, you start with a budget and you design to the budget. You program to the budget. And I think that's what we're suggesting here. So we want to know early whether or not the programmed items that we factor into this potential project are doable and can be done for $4.5 million, because I don't think there's a lot of enthusiasm for the council to spend more than that. So if we're careful, if we get a designer that can design to that budget, and we're not looking to do cinder block brick walls or simplistic building, but a good building, but one that perhaps isn't like a lot of iconic, screaming to be seen architecture.
Yeah, I mean, we're calling this a community center, and yet at the same time, really what we're programming are young children and older adults. You heard from Park City Planning Commissioner Melissa Band last night asking council to think about the teenagers for this community center. Is it right. Too late in the process?
I don't know. You know, there can certainly be some aspect of teens, but I think initially it was programmed for something slightly different than that. I think our thoughts are that the MARC can be modified or programmed to some extent to serve some of the teens.
All right. And then the summer camp program itself, I mean, with spots there selling out like in 2 hours, do we need to think about this community center being bigger to accommodate the demand?
Well, I think that they are looking at that aspect of it with regard to the initial programming size. And so we're trying to meet that need.
All right. Any update on the march? The council went ahead and approved the necessary permit for the...
No, it was unanimously passed last night, and we're excited to see them. And that'll be an interesting parade. It sounds like there's a lot of people coming.
Okay. Also, the Summit County Partnership for Mental Health and Substance Abuse Steering Committee apparently met for the last time. Council Member Nan Worrell said it's well-organized, asking that the council donate some $15,000 from the contingency fund to help with the startup cost. Did you guys vote on that?
That was unanimously supported as well, and that money has already been allocated and can be used for that use. So, yeah, we're 100% behind that.
Okay. Let's see. You also approved the purchase of 6 new electric buses?
We did indeed.
Okay. Anything else from last night's meeting?
Not that I can think of. It was a long night, blurred by a strong beginning. So I just want to thank you, and I want to thank the residents of our community for supporting us through this process for the Bonanza Flats effort.
Okay, so we're looking to raise how much between now and March?
Oh, I want all $13 million between March 15th.
Okay. Again, Mayor Jack Thomas, Wendy Fisher from Utah Open Lands, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
It's 8:47. We'll be talking with Robin Marouche and Morgan Spurlock about the new exhibit at the Kimball Arts Center. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. KPCW News Time, 8:48. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. 33, the exhibit which celebrates 33 years of the Independent Spirit and Sundance Film Festival, is showcasing 33 artists at the forefront of contemporary art. It's also the current exhibit now at the Kimball Arts Center. In the studio with details, I have Arts Center Director Robin Marouche. On the phone with me, I have the exhibit's curator and 5-time Sundance alumnus, Morgan Spurlock. Good morning to both of you.
Hi, Leslie.
Morgan, are you there?
Hi, just one moment.
Okay. Well, Robin, let's get with you and talk about the genesis of this exhibit.
Absolutely. So I was in Los Angeles in 2012 and saw a show that Morgan curated of contemporary artists called New Blood. And I loved the show so much that when he was here last year for the Eagle Huntress movie that he produced, he brought the actual eagle to the Kimball Arts Center. He was being interviewed by the press, actually by our friend Nan Shalette Noaker, and I interrupted and said, if you ever want to do a show at the Kimball Arts Center like you did in L.A., we would love it. And we dreamed up the concept of how to pay tribute to the Sundance Film Festival that we all love so much. And it was his idea, his inspiration, and we're thrilled to be working with him.
All right. So can you talk a little bit about what we will see with the 33 pieces? Mixed media, oils, watercolor, all of it?
All of it. There's a lot of pop artists. They're leading contemporary visual artists, many from Los Angeles and New York, really scattered all over the country, with the common theme of paying tribute to the magic that is the film festival and the independent spirit. And were handpicked by Morgan and Gallery 1988 in Los Angeles. You've got famous street artist Shepard Fairey participating, really interesting artists like Swoon, whose show work is in the Tate in London and in MoMA. So we're really blessed to have Morgan's participation and his outreach with these artists.
So somehow they all have a connection, though, to the Sundance Film Festival?
They created a unique piece of art that is to pay homage somehow. So you'll see Napoleon Dynamite, Quentin Tarantino, Beasts of the Southern Wild in the works.
So these weren't done prior to this happening?
No, they were.
They were
done for this show.
Just on, that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
that's
so they were done just for this,
yes,
as opposed to just being done out, you know, they were being done for whatever reason.
That's right. And
okay.
If Morgan is on the line yet, he can talk about how he reached out to these different artists.
Do we have you, Morgan? So it was just 33 pieces. It wasn't like you had all of these to choose from.
Right. So it's the 33rd year of the festival. So he reached out to 33 artists and said, you have the opportunity to create a unique piece of art to be showcased at this festival. And I just want to remind everyone that admission is free. So come by in between movies. And Morgan will be here for the opening on Saturday, January 21st, between 3 and 6, we're going to have an artist panel for our members and guests. It does open on the 19th of January. So it's open when the festival starts, and it goes through till February 12th. And a portion of any sales will be donated to the Sundance Labs as well to be able to support the work that they continue to do for filmmakers around the world.
All right. So can you tell me, is there anything about Morgan in this? I mean, like, maybe him at his supersize?
You're going to have to come and see. Yeah, it's all about Morgan. He's so playful and provocative and fun, and he's just been a great person to work with. He's got so much energy and new ideas.
Okay. Hello, Morgan?
Hey,
Hi.
How are you?
We're doing well. We've been talking all about you. So I don't know how much you've heard.
Well, my ears were burning. That's why I called in, see?
Okay. Well, tell me, Robin's kind of explained the genesis of this, and that you can talk a little bit about who did you reach out to then to be a part of this show?
Oh, my gosh. I reached out to so many artists. You know, it was one of those things when I got the call from Robin and from Kimball, I was so excited. You know, we had such a great event there with Eagle Huntress last year, and, you know, I told them what a huge art collector I am and what a fan I am. So as soon as they kind of had this window and this slot open up, I just got on the phone and started calling all of the artists that I have relationships with. And I mean, there's so many incredible, you know, pop surrealist artists, you know, people like Natalia Fabia, Derek Gore, Swoon, who's a, you know, she's such a rock star, to people like Ron English, who folks may remember did the Fat Ronald, the Fat Ronald McDonald poster for Super Size Me years ago. So we just have this amazing mix of I think, brilliant current contemporary artists, pop contemporary artists, lowbrow artists that are all bringing in, you know, different styles, different looks, all to celebrate kind of what I think the Sundance Film Festival stands for.
Yeah. So in terms of what you like, I mean, can you talk a little bit about maybe a couple of your favorites?
A couple of my favorite artists that are going to be there? Oh, my gosh, there's so many. Well, one of them is... there's an artist named Gary Baseman, who is an incredibly talented artist. He did a painting of Beasts of the Southern Wild that I think people are just going to go ape over. It is so beautiful, so playful. It's gorgeous. Olek, who is, you know, some people may be familiar with her work. She does a lot of crochet and macrame, and, you know, years ago she, you know, there was a photos that went all over the internet of her when she crocheted an entire covering over the bull on Wall Street, and this giant pink bull was on Wall Street that was covered in kind of this grandma-looking knitting. So she has an original piece that she's going to unveil as part of the festival, and I just think that people are going to love it. I think that it's something that I think is really representative of the independent spirit, with some really, I think, talented artists just showing, I think, the impact Sundance has had by making films that are homages to, or making pieces of art that are homages to, whether it be the creators or the films themselves. Jim McKenzie has done one of the most amazing salutes to Reservoir Dogs that you'll ever see that's going to be on display there. And I just think it'll be a fun time for people to come out and have a different side of the festival experience. I think that, you know, you go to the films or you go up, you know, Main Street and it is a zoo, it's packed. I think you can come over to the Kimball Arts Center and celebrate, you know, I think the magic of the Sundance Film Festival in a very different way and in a different place.
All right. So what are you working on now? Anything in particular?
What am I working on right now? Well, we had two movies that that we were hoping to get done in time for Sundance, and it just wasn't the case. So we were very frustrated. Like, the original idea was like, oh, my gosh, this is perfect. I'm going to have two movies at Sundance, and we're going to have this art show. It's going to be great. And so neither one of those got done. So those are now still in post-production. But I'm thankful I still at least get to come out for the art show. It's a dream come true to get to curate this with Kimball.
Films that you have directed or you're producing?
These are, one of the films is one I'm producing, and then the other film is a film that I'm directing.
Great. Okay. Anything else you'd like to tell us about the show?
Oh, my gosh. I just think everybody should come out. The spectacular grand opening reception is going to be on Saturday the 21st from 3 to 6, and then it's going to be up until February. So if you have a chance to come out during the Sundance Film Festival, I'll be there a lot over that opening weekend, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. And then if you don't get a chance to come during the festival, you want to see it when it's a little bit more mellow and a little more calm, then it's going to be up until February 12th. So we would encourage people to come out, not only support great artists, but support, I think, the amazing Kimball Arts Center.
Okay. Well, thanks for your time, Morgan. Robin, does the Kimball then, unlike years past where you kind of closed down for the festival, it remains open as a film, as a art center then?
That's right. So the Kimball loved Sundance so much. They're one of our favorite partners. They've been so good to us, and we really want to be supporting them in a way that triangulates for the festival-going experience. So we're very excited to be able to support, like I said, a portion of the proceeds of sales to go towards the labs. But it's fun. This will be my 17th film festival in a row, and there are so many good memories of films that I saw years ago that I had forgotten how much I love. So it's got a lot of energy and great memory. So come out, free admission, and enjoy the festival.
Okay. Any update on your replacement?
Not yet. We posted it yesterday.
Okay. And you're looking nationally, right?
Yes, we are. Okay. Internationally.
Oh, wow. Okay. Hey, Robin, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:57.